Today on Real Ghost Stories Online, some people tell ghost stories to scare you. Others talk about them like they're describing the weather, and that's what made this one so unforgettable.
This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
It is. Thank you so much for listening. We love to hear the ghost stories, so if you have one, please share it with us. It's a really easy thing to do. You can leave us a voicemail at 855-853-4802, or you can write it down. Just go to realghoststoriesonline.com, and wherever you are listening, also really easy to do, just hit follow, subscribe. We would appreciate that very much. I'm Carol Hughes. Kathy Gordon's here today.
Well, I sure am.
Well, so the last few days, I have noticed some little short comments on social media. And then they're basically like little short ghost stories or something.
Oh, good. Right? I was so worried it was like, you know, people were hating on us or something.
No, and that happens. Oh, okay. And I don't have that thick of a skin, so I don't always look at social media. So if anybody wants to get in touch with me, you better send me a direct message. If you want to tell me how much you hate me, you better do it in a direct message.
Oh,
because I've learned that over the years. It's just too many years in radio, too many years of doing this. And I'm like, it's not healthy.
On one hand, I'd like to know, because if there is something that I can constructively make better that I'm doing, maybe that's not bad news to have.
Yes, but it's usually presented in the package of Carol has the most annoying laugh I've ever heard. If she wouldn't laugh so much, it's that sort of weird stuff. And so a lot of times it's just not healthy for me. But anyway, but this is interesting because I will read exactly what the comment says. And now I don't speak Spanish, so I apologize for Spanish words and names I don't say correctly. It says, there was a Mexican radio station called La Mano Paluda, where a guy sold his soul to the devil. In order for him to be rich, he sacrificed his grandma. Until this day, he is alive. He practices the occult. His laugh has a lot of evil in it. Would it be cool if you guys checked it out?
Oh, my.
That's the story, right? So I plugged it into ChatGPT. I'm like, what do you know about this? Anything. So I'll tell you what I found out. So in 2002, a man calling himself Josue Velasquez. He phoned La Mano Paluda, a hugely popular paranormal call-in radio show in Mexico, hosted by Juan Ramon Sayens. I hope I said those close to correctly.
Okay.
So Josue said he had grown up poor and desperately wanted wealth. According to him, someone introduced him to occult practices, and he intentionally entered into a pact with the devil in exchange for money and success. He claimed the pact worked. He said he suddenly had money, expensive cars, women, and everything he'd wanted, but there was a price. According to him, dark entities began appearing to him. He described shadow figures, terrifying nightmares, demonic manifestations that became more frequent over time. The most disturbing part of the call was his claim that the devil demanded sacrifices. He said his grandmother became one of those sacrifices, implying that her death was part of the bargain. He also suggested other people around him had died because of the pact. None of those claims were ever substantiated. During the conversation, he alternated between sounding frightened and oddly amused. He would laugh at inappropriate moments, and many listeners remember that laugh as one of the creepiest parts of the broadcast. As the call continued, he said he wanted to escape the pact but couldn't. He claimed the entities wouldn't let him leave and his life was becoming unbearable. The story did not end there. The call became so famous that the host, Juan, stayed in contact with him for years. And according to people associated with the show, Juan even met him in person and reportedly consulted priests and paranormal investigators because he believed something unusual was happening around the case. Then in 2011, the radio host died unexpectedly at age 48 from complications of a gastrointestinal illness. Almost immediately, rumors spread online that his death was connected to Josue's case and whatever darkness he claimed to be involved with had somehow followed the radio host. There's never been any evidence for that. Doctors attributed his death to natural causes, but in paranormal circles, the timing only fueled the legend. So it said, is there any evidence? And it said, not really. There's never been any evidence that he became wealthy because of occult practices. There's never been evidence that he sacrificed anyone. They don't even know that's his real name. But some people believe it was a genuine confession from someone involved in the occult. Some think that he suffered from mental illness or delusions. Others believe it was an elaborate hoax that became famous because of how convincing and unsettling the caller sounded. So what keeps the story alive isn't so much the details as the audio. So even people who don't believe a word of it often say the recording has an eerie quality that sticks with them, which is why it is discussed more than two decades later. So that little bitty thing that he said in his comment, that's the story behind it. Okay. So it really is the guy, you know, it's a regular paranormal radio show. And they used to have more things like that than they do now. Now everything's owned by iHeart or Odyssey. And it's like they're all the same programming all over the country. Yeah. There's no local talk shows like this, hardly. There are some, but very few. But especially something this specific is paranormal. And so that I'm sure the show was super popular. And then everyone heard this guy. The radio guy has to be like, boom, this is the best caller I've ever had. I'm going to keep up with this guy.
Yeah, it's in his best interest to do that.
And so he stays in touch with him. The listeners become invested in this story, and then it kind of grows a life of its own. But then when the radio host dies himself, then that kind of becomes part of the story, a big part of the story.
Right.
Like, kind of implied, was he sacrificed so this guy could have money and women and cars?
You know, I think one of the ways that you could easily prove that is to go over to his house and see if he had money and women and cars.
Right.
Like, if he had everything there, you'd go, oh, well, maybe, you know, I mean.
But that's the thing about radio is you're only hearing it and you're not seeing it, so.
But you know, it said that he actually met him. So it seems like you could track that down and actually say, you know, he's driving this old beat up car.
But I will also say this about radio, because I was in radio for most of my entire career, that a lot of what the people on air, these callers are sometimes fake. And believe it or not.
What?
Yes. Are you kidding me? They are set up like. I remember things we did that were so outlandish. We wrote them to be so absurd, no one could believe it, yet people believed it. Yeah. And it was like, okay, there's no way this could be true. Or like Tony's always talking about stories like he had made up. I think Tony did the voice on it because Tony's good at voices. But it was, I can't remember the guy's first name, but he was a bowling psychic. And so he would be like, oh, that is a spare. That means blah, 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 blah. And so they do it for fun. But when you have a show like this and this guy calls in, it's in his own best interest for ratings sometimes to keep the story going. So even if the guy met him, he might not have ever gone to his house, or he might have gone to his house and been like, this guy's got nothing, but it sure does make great radio.
Exactly. And
so who knows? But so who knows if it's true or not, but that's the story behind that one little comment that we got on Facebook.
It's impossible for you and me to say whether there's an element of truth to any of this or not.
No idea.
Nothing. The one thing I would say that I know for a fact is true about this story is it was a creepy episode.
Well,
when you were listening to it.
And
that whatever the caller did when he called in unnerved people.
And the laughter thing, you know, so it's like people are hearing the story and they're believing it.
And, he was creepy. Yeah. So that we know for a fact that whether any of what he said, whether there was any truth to it or not, he was good at telling a ghost story.
Yeah.
Because people were like, that was creepy. Like, he creeped me out.
And he sacrificed his grandmother.
Right?
Like, that's just creepy. So yeah. It is a great story, though. I was really surprised because I was, like, not even going to mention that comment. And I'm like, I'll run it through ChatGPT and see what it has to say about it. Mm-hmm. And so that's apparently the story behind it.
There is a famous episode along this lines, and we know that it was a good, creepy as hell episode that got people pretty worked up. You know, how much of it was good acting? How much of it was, you know, like you said, the host himself could have written the script and handed it to somebody. But it was kind of like, but could it have been like, you know, the War of the Worlds thing where that was creepy? That scared people pretty badly.
Oh, and I don't know, because here is, but the call is in Spanish. Mm-hmm. So if I was to play it, it says the original call, or what is generally accepted to be the original, is about 1 hour, 40 minutes long. It has been reposted on YouTube and podcast platforms many times. It's a very slow conversational radio interview. The creepiness comes from the caller's tone, long pauses, and the fact that the host takes him seriously. It's not from jump scares or sound effects. Mm-hmm. So I don't speak Spanish, so, you know, I'm not going to, it'll be lost on me. But you can find it.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah. So that is interesting. So,
and is there a grain of truth in some elements of this? Could be.
Who knows? Maybe
the caller actually thought he did make a deal with the devil.
And it could be mental illness. It could be 100% true. It could be somewhere in between. I don't know. He could have been into the occult. He got a great deal on a car. I don't know. And after he left the dealership, made a stop at a bar, and this really hot woman was sitting next to him, and it's like, my God.
And cashed in the Keno ticket, and boom,
everything is going my way. Bob's, I just won $20. It's like, this is great. So I don't know.
And what's one man's wealth is not necessarily everyone's, you know. But I have a feeling that somewhere in this, I think there's probably, like you said, a grain of truth or element of something. I just feel like, you know, could it have just been a rigged show by the DJ for ratings?
Could have been.
Could have been. The guy could have been a really good actor. What the one thing we do know is it was well done.
Mm-hmm.
It was creepy.
Yeah. And he kept it going. It wasn't just that one day. You know, it sounds like he came back on the show. He kept everybody up to date. But then when this poor guy dies at a young age, it kind of became part of the story. So I don't know. So let's go to another ghost story. This has nothing to do with the occult or sacrificing grandmothers. It says, I was listening to the show the other day, and it reminded me of something that happened years ago when I was working in an insurance office. I was getting ready for family to come visit, and I mentioned to one of the women I worked with that I needed to rent a carpet steam cleaner. She told me not to waste the money because she had one sitting in her garage that she hardly ever used. Before we left work that Friday, she told me to stop by her house Saturday afternoon and pick it up. I had never been to her house before, but it wasn't very far from mine. She answered the door, invited me in, and we stood in the living room talking for a couple minutes about work and my family coming to town. Then she said, let me go get the cleaner. So she walked down the hallway. I sat down to wait. I don't know why, but after she left the room, I started feeling uncomfortable. There wasn't anything strange about the house. It was a little older, but it seemed like a normal house. I could hear her opening a door somewhere in the back of the house, and I remember thinking she'd be back any second. I kept looking toward the hallway without really meaning to. I'd look away, and a few seconds later, I'd catch myself looking back again. I wasn't expecting to see anything. I just had a feeling that I wasn't there by myself. And I remember thinking to myself, you are being ridiculous. About that time, she came back carrying the carpet cleaner. Soon as she walked into the room, that uneasy feeling went away. We kept talking while she showed me how to fill the water tank and told me about the cleaning solution, and then there was a loud crash behind us. It startled me enough that I jumped. We both turned around, and a framed picture that had been hanging on the wall was lying face down on the floor. I said, "Well, that was kind of weird." She looked over and said, "That sort of thing happens around here quite a bit." I waited for her to smile or tell me she was kidding, but she didn't. She walked over, picked up the picture, put it on the desk, came back like nothing unusual had happened. I finally asked her what she meant, and she said little things have been happening ever since they moved into the house. Things like that, pictures falling for no reason. Things would end up somewhere they didn't remember putting them. Sometimes they'd hear footsteps. She said she didn't feel threatened by it. She'd kind of gotten used to it over the years. And she said, "We call him George." And I said, "Why George?" And she said she had no idea. They just started calling whatever was there George one day, and it stuck. The funny thing was how normal she made it all sound. She wasn't trying to convince me the house was haunted, and she definitely wasn't trying to scare me. I have to admit, I was a little nervous when I took the steam cleaner back a couple of days later, but nothing happened. We worked together a couple more years after that. I was actually fascinated by hearing her stories, but anytime we'd get together outside of work, we never got together at her house. Thanks for all the stories over the years. I never miss an episode. That's from Jessica. I love that when she took it back, she's like, "I gotta be brave. I'm taking the steam cleaner back today."
But that's when you'd like, pull up really fast and run up the front door, bang on it. "Here you go. Okay, got
like,
you.
Like, Brenda, I'm outside. Can you come get your steam cleaner? Honk, honk, honk."
I hate to have something fall off the wall again just because right? I showed up.
It is weird because, you know, when something just randomly falls off, you've had it happen, but when things just randomly fall off of a wall, the timing is weird. Like, it would scare the crap out of you, especially because she'd been feeling kind of nervous being in the room by herself. Something falls off the wall. Her coworker doesn't even really react to it. It's like, "Oh, George." Things like that happen all the time. I think that's interesting.
I do too. This Brenda, that's what I guess we're calling her, Brenda's defense, she lives there and apparently does not feel threatened.
Well, I just made up the name Brenda, but
I like the name Brenda. I say, let's run with it. But I think that she doesn't feel threatened. It doesn't feel bad. I have had instances where things have come off a wall and I did feel weirded out by it. But then again, it happened in a weird way. Same wall, different pictures, but I had like an arrangement of pictures, you know. And one evening, I just heard a kind of a loud crash back in, sounded like came from my bedroom. So I went back there and a picture that was hanging on the wall was like had fallen, but fallen so bad it was bent. It was a metal frame. Okay.
Yeah, like it was, all bent, busted up.
But it was out in the middle of the room. It wasn't just like it fell off the wall straight down and hit the floor or something. It was out like 4 or 5 feet away from the wall. And I thought, okay, well, you know, that's weird. All right, now, same wall, like maybe a couple years later, I have problems with a different picture that's up on that wall. And, you know, one night it fell down and I rehung it, reframed it, put new glass in it, all this stuff. And then a few nights later, the damn thing exploded. It wasn't just like, oh, it fell. It exploded. Like the frame itself was all broken and busted. It was a wooden frame. The glass was all over. A little bit was actually on the bed with me. I had some that was, oddly to me, stacked pieces of glass on the nightstand beside me, which I think, how does that happen? Where you get like 4 or 5 pieces of glass that stack on top of each other when they explode. Weird. So there are times when a picture falling down can be really very unsettling and very creepy. Apparently, Brenda did not feel that way about this. Oh, yeah. You know, this sort of thing happens. You know, keys disappear or I hear some footsteps or something. But she didn't feel afraid of it. So, you know, we have, I think, do you suppose that if we could say there are, you know, out of the spirits, a percentage of the spirits are absolutely just fine. They are just doing what they do. They don't really try to hurt us or do anything. I kind of feel like probably the majority of them are like that. They're not really trying to hurt people.
Yeah.
We maybe get unnerved by it, but it's they're not really trying to hurt us. There are some, though, that are not, that do.
Oh, 100%.
There are some. Yeah. Right. But I would say, I don't think that's the majority of them. We get a lot of things from people that are like, yeah, it was weird, but, you know, I lived there another 10 years and nothing else really happened. You know?
Yeah. And sometimes I wonder, too, because, you know, we get so many different submissions and some of them almost feel like they're, I don't know. I don't always know if they're legit or not. You know, some of them are simple hauntings. Those feel legit to me. Like if I'd have had that story about the guy in the occult and sacrificing grandma, I don't know that I could share that story. It's so dark. And I get that dark things happen. Don't get me wrong. But I also don't want, you know, this guy setting me up. So,
yeah.
But we don't get a lot of dark stories. We really don't.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of haunting type of activity that happens, it's just this kind of weird random, like something fell or something, you know, I heard a voice or I heard footsteps. I mean, nothing really comes from it. You just feel like maybe somebody's standing there. Now that is a creepy feeling though, right? But for the large part, no damage done.
Yeah.
Right?
But I mean, at the same time, you know, when we were kids, we had a very haunted house that was very, very scary.
And, yeah, now there was damage done there.
But I mean, not to me. Nothing ever touched me or scratched me.
It did. And it came in form of trauma, right? Like, if you actually are super afraid of something and it causes trauma in your life and years later,
I'm talking about physical.
Right.
No, not like physical. I never had anything actually physically hurt me.
But what I'm saying is we have a lot of people that it doesn't even feel traumatic. It just feels, it was just weird and it happened and unexplainable.
Yeah.
You know, we do have people that suffer from trauma with paranormal experience. You know, I think it's interesting that Brenda in this house was like, well, you know, it's okay. I can live with it.
And that's okay too. You can get
and used Jessica's to it. Like, I like Brenda, and I'll you know occasionally borrow the deep steam cleaner, but we don't socialize at her house.
Yeah, and you know I've talked to more people on the Grave Talks because those are one-on-one interviews. But I talked to a guy last week, and he's been a paranormal investigator for years and years and years. I don't know how old he is, but I think he's a little older and lives in a haunted house now. And, you know, I'm like, some of the stuff that he's telling me would have scared me. Like, that stuff would have scared me. But he's so used to it. I think that, you know, you could maybe get conditioned and after a while be like, it's not going to scare me. And I think that for people like him, you have to be that way because I think it could feed off your fear.
Right.
And that's when I think things are really going to get dark. If something can feed off your fear and you're, you know, because let's just be real. There ain't no paranormal investigative team that wants me in there being scared because they'll be like, you know, you and your fear need to go outside and calm down.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm going to throw out a little different take on this. How about Brenda sees things happen? But she's not a particularly sensitive person, right? There must be some explanation. I don't know. It's, you know, what it is. But now Jessica is very sensitive, steps into the house, feels like somebody's watching her.
But Brenda has named it, so they obviously feel it.
But maybe it's not as deep as Jessica. Maybe Jessica has more of a sensitivity and really senses that somebody's there.
And maybe Brenda
Whereas Brenda doesn't get that feeling like necessarily that somebody's there. She just notices the keys are moved.
I think that Brenda might just not give no shits.
Oh, that could be.
You know, it's what it is.
One tough cookie.
Here's my steam cleaner. So that picture fell off the wall. And, you know
tomorrow it'll be, footsteps up in the attic.
And as for some reason, all of a sudden, I want to talk like this. It's like, she's got to smoke.
The ants on The Simpsons.
I know. And every time I do that voice, I always have to have my hands like I got a cigarette.
I know. You always feel like you're smoking, when you're doing that.
Can't do it without my hand like that.
I know.
But that for some reason, I got Brenda like that in my head. So Brenda don't give no shits. I'll tell you another story about George. Anyways, let's go to this story.
First off, let me say I love the show. I do have an experience from when my parents were house hunting. They got tired of living in the city and they wanted to move to the suburbs and they wanted to kind of live near me. So they were looking in my area and I kind of just invited myself along to the showings. So we went to this little house in the next town and it was small. It was a ranch style with a crawl space. But it was really, really well maintained. The outside was clean, the lawn was manicured, and the inside was just really warm. It was furnished, so it wasn't creepy in any way. It was really nice, actually. So we're walking around, and they were looking at the bathroom, and I was like, I need to go in this bedroom. So I went in there, and it was set up like a guest room. There was a bed, a small dresser, and a closet, and I needed to open that closet door. I needed to look on the floor. I just had this thing that was pulling me, drawing me there. So I opened the closet door, and there's a few sweaters in there, and on the bottom is a box with some board games, and I move the box, and I lift up the carpet there, and there's the door to the crawl space, but it was locked. So I put everything back and I rejoined my parents and they're looking at the other rooms and my dad asked about the crawl space and before the realtor could say anything, I said, oh, I found it. It's in this first bedroom over here, but the door is locked. So the realtor went and she had the door or the key for the main door. And she thought maybe that would work. So she tried it and it didn't work. So she was going to call the listing agent. As she was dialing her phone, I tell my mom, you need to ask what happened to the owner or why they're selling. And my mom looks at me with this kind of funny look and goes, well, why? And I said, because the owner died. So my mom gives me this kind of like raised eyebrow look, but she asked her agent if she knew. And her agent said, no, I don't know, but I'll ask when I ask about Keith. So I called the listing agent, but got the voicemail and just left a message. And so we continue to look outside and we come back in and all of a sudden I just knew. And I said, look on the hat rack under the straw hat, the key to the crawl space is there. Our agent kind of gave me this strange look and she was headed towards the hat rack, which was right by the front door. There were five little pegs and there was a coat, like a windbreaker and a couple of baseball caps. And then on the end, there was a straw hat. Before she reached it, though, her phone rang, and it was the listing agent. So our agent asked, hey, why is the house up for sale? And she looked at us, and her face kind of froze. And then she said, well, where's the key to the crawl space? It's locked. And we couldn't hear what the other agent was saying, but our agent's face kind of said it all. And her mouth just kind of dropped open, and she would not take her eyes off me. And she went and she picked up the straw hat, and sure enough, the key was there. So our agent said thanks and hung up, and she was addressing my mom, but she was looking straight at me, and she said, the owner died, and her kids are selling the house, part of the estate deal. And then all of them started looking at me, And I just excused myself and went out of the house and said, I'll see you guys when you're done. So they looked at the crawl space and they came out and they said it wasn't creepy or anything. It was just weird. So my mom asked me, did you see a note? Did you see, you know, any kind of instructions anywhere? And I said, no, there was nothing. I just knew. And she's like, well, how did you know? And I said, I don't know how I knew. I could feel that that's where it was. It was almost like it wasn't there. And then poof, it was there. The college was there. So, my parents did not end up buying that house, not because of that, but they ended up finding a house they liked more. But they insisted on bringing me to all of their showings, just in case there were any more messages. So like I said, it wasn't a scary story. It's kind of funny. That was kind of a new one. I do feel things sometimes, like when I go into something and I just feel like you're not alone. But I didn't have that feeling there. It wasn't creepy. It was just strange. Really warm, really comforting. I think they probably could have been happy in that house too. Keep up the great work and thank you. And I hope you guys take care. Bye.
I love that the parents are like, you are coming to every house with us.
Well, wouldn't you do that? I mean, absolutely. I'd be like, yeah, I need an insight into making sure everything is, you know,
like when comfortable. When your kids were little, like say you were looking at a house and one of your kids would like, we need this key, and your kid just happens to know where the key is and like, and knows weird stuff about the house. Would you even consider moving in there if that was like a house that you really liked? I'm like, my kid has this bizarro knowledge of this house. Well, I'm not totally comfortable with that.
You know, this is a weird take on that, but what age is the kid? If the kid is an adult living, you know, in a, by themselves, whatever, and they come along and then
and she, they I, have. I assume she was a kid at the time.
She said that they wanted to live, move out by her.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
So I think that she was grown and she could look at you and say, okay, you know, I'm getting these vibes, but it's good. Like she said, I think they could have been comfortable. I would not have had a problem with them buying that house. It would have been cool. But if I had a child that said to me,
yeah,
these things, I'd go, no, we're not. No, I'm not going to let something be manipulating my child.
Yeah.
You know, it's just different when something is directing children and an adult who maybe could have more of a say mm-hmm. on, you know,
and it what is it weird is. How the knowledge just comes in. Like she did, yeah. She didn't act like this happens to me all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, that location, mm-hmm. that person who passed away maybe was able to communicate with her.
Yeah.
I just think that's so interesting.
Yeah. Like you just know where the key is.
Yeah. It'd be weird if your parents would buy the house and then every time you go there, it's like, oh, yeah, I remember Thanksgiving here. I mean, before you guys moved in. You know, it would be weird. That would be really strange.
Yeah.
Well, if you have a real ghost story, share it with us. You can call it in at 855-853-4802. Write it down at realghoststoriesonline.com. And become a premium subscriber if you want to. No commercials, advanced episodes, access to the archive. Sign up through Apple Podcasts. Or you can sign up through patreon.com/realghoststories. And for all of us here at Real Ghost Stories Online, thank you very much for listening.
Normally in these ads, you'd expect someone like me to ask you to buy something. But I want to ask you to do something different. I'm Dave Farenthold, and I'm a reporter for the New York Times. I'm an investigative reporter, which means that I follow the money, inside of government and outside of government. The point of my job is to find things people are trying to hide. It involves talking to lots of people. It involves looking through lots and lots of documents. And if there weren't folks like me to go beyond the surface to understand who is really shaping what the government does, the public would be left in the dark about what the government's doing with your tax money, what the government's doing to you through regulations and spending. If you're like me and you think this kind of journalism is important, seek out a news source that does firsthand, fact-based reporting. If that's the New York Times, thank you. If that's your local paper, that's great too, because where you get your information matters.